Whenever Valentine's Day rolls around, our culture is prompted to think about romance, love, and sex. It's no fluke that the latest installment in the 50 Shades of Grey film series was released just a few days before Valentine's Day. As followers of the one who created romance, love, and sex, we need to follow Christ by understanding and experiencing romance, love, and sex in ways that bring honor and glory to God, rather than in ways that are broken and sinful expressions of sex and sexuality. This means that we have to consciously guide our kids through the minefield of pornography that litters today's cultural landscape. What should we make of the 50 Shades phenomenon? What does the interest in the films teach us about what to say and how to say it in our conversations with kids, young adults, and even parents? We're having a conversation about cultural sexuality and biblical sexuality on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, it's Valentine's Day, and we're recording another episode of Youth Culture Matters. We're going to stay on topic here with the conversation we have just a little bit later with a couple of our friends who are involved at ground-level youth ministry and talking to kids about love and sex and sexuality. I know that's on everyone's mind today since it is Valentine's Day, but before we get to that, I want to welcome Jason Sochenik. Jason, you guys celebrate Valentine's Day on the West Coast.
We do. In fact, I have a Valentine that was sent to you. You might have received it at Christmas, though.
What?
It was a fruitcake.
Did he send a fruitcake?
He did not.
I never saw that. I said, you're just messing around with me, huh? Okay.
I'm just messing around
yeah,
with you.
Yeah, well, that was... Number one, I thought I missed something, because we have had problems with the mail here. And because I think the horse has a broken leg, so they're not getting things delivered as quickly as normal. But then I'm thinking, if you sent me a fruitcake and I didn't get it, that's disappointing. That'd be
for a brief moment. No. He thought that you did really love him.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. Well, I know he had to look to you to see if that was actually the case. But no,
I thought
I did
maybe
not send
Chris
you a
intercepted
Valentine
it. Chris intercepted it and snarfed it down. So yeah. Hey, you know what? Okay, so it's Valentine's Day, but Chris and I were talking before you came on here, and we want to. I mean, what else is today? Do you know?
What else is today?
Yeah. I mean, it's a special day. Look at your hat. Look at what you're wearing there on
the
your
Cubs?
Head. Well, yeah, okay, you got a baseball cap on. Many of the teams have pitchers and catchers reporting today. So spring training.
That's right.
Spring training is opening. And Chris and I were having a little debate here about who knows the most about baseball. I mean, who's got the greatest – baseball knowledge, and maybe it's not so much the strategy of the game, but who knows, you know, facts, figures, baseball trivia. And I know we could pull Chris in on this. That'd be unfair because he's a stats guy, right? He actually studied statistics for a while. But let me, Chris, between me and Jason,
sure,
who do you think knows the most? Or Jason, between me and you, who do you think knows the most?
Well, I don't always like to admit this, but you've got many more years of knowledge on me than I do.
This is the one time when we were throwing you a line, and you could have very easily, because we didn't set this up here, you could have very easily said, you know, me, Jason, I know the most, right? You could have been really, because we're going to try to set you up with a trivia question here. So
you go, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, go for it. So Chris has a trivia question.
I do think Jason answered accurately. Well, I think in terms of baseball stats and figures and stuff, he's got both of us trumped there. I would agree with that. But here we do have a fun trivia question for you.
Right. That's the right answer, Chris.
Okay.
There have been a small number of major leaguers who have hit a home run on their very first pitch. Not just their first at bat. But their very first pitch.
Very first pitch, first at bat, first
of
pitch.
Their first at first bat,
pitch
obviously.
They yep. faced in the major leagues. Okay.
Correct. So I would like to see if you can name the first player in Major League Baseball history to do so.
The first player in Major League Baseball history to do so. Wow.
Don't be Googling. I see you looking at your phone there. Come
no,
on.
No, no, no. I'm not Googling. I'm thinking who that might be. So I'm going to just take a guess. And I want to say Babe, but I don't think it's Babe. I'm going to actually go with this is in left field, Roger Maris.
Your Babe Ruth guess, you're in the right era at least. The year was 1922.
All right, give him a hint. Okay. Try to bait him into this.
Sure.
See if you can figure it out.
It was against your favorite team, and the pitch was thrown by Hall of Famer Grover Cleveland Alexander.
Okay.
and you know his namesake pretty well.
Oh, my gosh, 22.
Played for the Pirates, right?
Pirates.
He was playing for the Pirates at the time.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I know.
Give him another hint. Can you, like, initials?
W.M.
Oh, Willie Mays. Not Willie Mays. No, sorry.
That's right, Willie Mays. Willie Mays hadn't been born yet, but he hit a home
sir,
run.
Well, you said 22, first, but automatically, yeah. W.M., that's the first player I think of. So W.M., I don't
he's
know.
Not a very good listener,
I know
is
I'm
he?
Gonna say.
No.
See, give him the hint again. See if he listens. He's not
you
listening.
You know his namesake very well with the initials W.M. You're speaking to one at the moment.
Walt Mueller?
Walter Mueller is the first player in Major League Baseball history to hit a home run on their very first pitch of their very first Major League at-bat.
You look totally gosh. Stumped, don't you? I mean, you are amazed.
We're not making this up.
This is true.
This is true.
Yeah.
That I'm now going to Google that.
Go ahead. Google
out,
it right now. Do you have it?
Hey, Walt, good for you. Good for you. I like that.
Well, it actually wasn't me. It was my namesake. Yeah. Now, all right, here's another question for you. He had a brother that played in the major leagues. Last name Mueller. Do you know what his first name was?
Jason.
Nope. Here you go. Here it is. What was it, Chris? Do you know?
No, I don't know it.
It was Heine.
Alexander.
Heine Mueller.
Well, we awesome. Might have come up with a new nickname for you then.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Hey, he had a son. He had a son who played in the major leagues as well. And he played, in the 40s and 50s, I think, is what it says there. And his name was Don Mueller. See, you learn something new every day.
I love it.
Isn't that great? That's a great question, isn't it? We stumped
that
you.
Is a great question. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, today here let's shift gears here because we want to get into the conversation. And it is Valentine's Day. The 50 Shades of Grey movie, the third one in the installment, came out over the weekend, and we're going to have a conversation here, Jason and I, with a couple of our friends. Jody Chung, who's been on the podcast before, and Jess Greaser, both are involved in youth ministry. They're involved in ministering to students, supervising staffs, that sort of thing. And what I want to do as we begin here is just give some definitions of pornography. And I actually included these, Jason, in a blog that I posted that Chris will link to. And let me just read these, then we'll take a break and come back and have our conversation. First, from Tim Chester's book, Closing the Window, Steps to Living Porn-Free. Pornography is anything we use for sexual titillation, gratification, or escape, whether it was intended for that purpose or not. Our friends at Harvest USA give this definition. Pornography is anything that the heart uses to find sexual expression outside of God's intended design for relational intimacy. It is anything that tempts or corrupts the human heart into desiring sexual pleasure in sinful ways. And certainly, you know, the 50 Shades movies would be included in that as well as the books. And then I'm going to throw this in because this is from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It's a little bit longer, but I like it because it adds some other aspects to this. Pornography consists in removing real or simulated sexual acts from the intimacy of the partners and in order to display them deliberately to third parties. It offends against chastity because it perverts the conjugal act, the intimate giving of spouses to each other. It does grave injury to the dignity of its participants, actors, vendors, and the public, since each one becomes an object of base pleasure and illicit profit for others. It immerses all who are involved in the illusion of a fantasy world. It is a grave offense. Civil authorities should prevent the production and distribution of pornographic materials. So those are three good definitions that I think we need to keep in mind. They're included in the, on the blog post, which you can find at cpyu.org. Right there, you can click at on it on the homepage, and then we'll actually put a link to it on the homepage for the podcast. So when we come back, we're going to have a conversation about pornography, about youth ministry, about 50 Shades of Grey. Hopefully, we'll get into a little bit of conversation about the Me Too movement as well. And we want to offer some very practical guidance and guidelines as we have a discussion about how to discuss these issues with our kids. So join us in just a couple of minutes after the break, and Jason and I will start that conversation. We're excited to announce that one of our most popular CPYU resources of all time has just been released in an updated and revised format. Tens of thousands of kids have been trained by their parents and youth workers to think Christianly about music and media with our How to Use Your Head to Guard Your Heart 3D Guide to Making Wise Media Choices. This easy-to-use teaching tool needs to be in your youth ministry toolbox if you desire to teach your students to integrate their faith into all of life. Jesus calls us to follow him, and that includes following him into the 6 to 9 hours a day of screen time that shape and mold the beliefs and behaviors of our kids. To learn more about our 3D media evaluation guide and to order a copy for every member of your youth group, go to our website at cpyu.org. Teach your kids to engage with media to the glory of God. Well, everybody, welcome back to this episode of Youth Culture Matters. And I know we're recording this on Valentine's Day, the day that we celebrate love. I don't know who invented Valentine's Day. Jason, do you? Was it Hallmark cards? And they are getting it more and more expensive. Yeah. We have to dig up some history on Valentine's Day. But it's very interesting that over the weekend, just prior to Valentine's Day this week, the third and last installment in the 50 Shades of Grey, or the 50 Shades series of films based on the books, the best-selling books, poorly written yet best-selling. And I think that's a unanimous opinion, that they're poorly written as in terms of how literature goes. The film came out over the weekend, and that is deliberate timing on their part. Just so you know, the film this last weekend, its debut weekend, finished as the number one film of the weekend. And it grossed just about $38.5 million in theaters here in the United States. The books, in case you're... Oh, by the way, the films, the total box office for the films over the years has been over $319 million. The books, I did some research on this, and they rank a series of books and how well a series is sold. The 50 Shades of Grey series, three books written by E.L. James between 2011 and 2015. The approximate sales is over $150 million. And I went through the list. You know, they have this this list of, you know, from most selling to lower selling. That is actually about 8 or 9 spots higher than the Chronicles of Narnia series, which is quite telling. So we want to talk about that. Jason, what is the splash in the Northwest where you are in Spokane? Anything?
You know, in all honesty, the splash was biggest with the first movie. So the first movie was the one that everyone was most concerned about. I think that the splash has decreased incrementally throughout the last couple of years as newer and newer sequels of the movie have come out. I think the conversation is needed because I think we've got to take into light everything that's gone on the last year. I think since the release of the last one, I think that the conversation has changed significantly. And I think that that's something that I think we'll talk about today. But I do think that the splash isn't what it was.
Yeah.
But it is important for us to have these conversations because it is a part of the soup, as you often mention, that students, but I would say young adults and even more so parents are living in, because yeah. that's really the impact that these books and those movies have an impact on
yeah.
most.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. And by the way, with the films, you know, it's not just box office. It's when it's more widely spread, you know, through things like Netflix or, you know, online platforms or on demand. I know I was flipping around locally here on the flipping the channels the other night, and on one of the main networks, and I'm not saying ABC, CBS, or, you know, NBC, but on one of the main networks on my channel lineup, I saw 50 Shades of Grey, and I'm sure it was edited. But still, it's there, and the message is there. So we're not going to have this conversation alone, Jason. We've invited a couple of our friends in, and both of them, I'm going to apologize right now, both of them are getting over sickness. So it was a last-minute go with them. But Jess Greaser is at Calvary Church in Souderton, Pennsylvania. And Jess, what's your position there? What's your title?
Officially now, Director of Student Ministries. And so that's the website.
And that puts you over, you know, how many students do you have? I've been down there a few times, and you've got a very active youth ministry.
Yeah. So depending, youth ministry is always funny, right? Depends on how you do numbers. But if we are talking about kids in our ministry that come out two times a month, between high school and middle school, we've got about 400 students, maybe a little more. We love it. In the Northeast, ministry is hopping. A lot of things competing for our kids' attention, but we have amazing students and really awesome families that we serve.
Yeah, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention you're right in the middle of where people are bleeding green right now. So pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah.
Very exciting.
I have to say that because rarely do we get, you know, somebody who shares my love for the Philadelphia Eagles, Super Bowl champions, by the way, Chris here. So Jess, good. Thanks. Thanks for joining us. And then also Jody Chung, who's been on before, and Jody is down in Houston, and the name of your church, Jody, is it West Houston?
West Houston Chinese Church.
The West Houston Chinese Church. I've had the privilege of being down there as well, and it was a joy to meet Jody. And Jody, your student population is maybe a little bit different because of the second generation issues. Just talk a little bit about your setting there.
Sure. Well, we have a church overall of, you know, upwards of 600-700, but our youth group is less than 100, around 80 students that come in every week. And they are largely second generation American. So their parents were immigrants here. So that's the kind of population that I've been serving in here. And I'm the youth pastor over middle and high school students.
Okay. And Jody, you were a part of something that Duffy Robbins and I were able to be a part of at Gordon-Conwell Seminary just a few weeks ago. And we did she was one of a dozen people involved in youth ministry from across North America who came up to Gordon-Conwell and was a part of a symposium on traditional biblical sexuality in a changing youth culture, where we really worked together not to listen to lectures, but really to do case studies and hammer out how to respond to the very kind of thing we're going to talk about today. So just to jump into this, and I think Jason dropped off here. Are you still with us, Jason? He dropped off, so he's going to be back. This is part of the problem with technology, but we're just going to run with it. Either one of you, you know, what is the splash? You know, what has the discussion been like in your circles? And from your perspective, you know, who is it that is, you know, involved with the films, involved with the books more than anybody else? And beyond just out there in the mainstream culture, how have you seen and heard this coming into the church? Either one of you.
Well, I think for me here, our students have not brought it up. It hasn't come kind of bubbling up necessarily through our student ministries directly as much as young adults and students' parents. And again, not widespread, but that's really where the the buzz kind of sprung. And I would agree with Jason that I think the initial action really was when the first book, like when the books came out and then the first movie. Now it's almost as if we've taken a passive seat. Like we're, you know, it's not being discussed as much where we are. So I haven't had large scale conversations with students, more of one-on-one side conversations as students either ask opinion or seek wisdom as it's come up in side conversations.
Yeah. What about you, Jody?
Yeah, I would agree with Justin. Our youth group, it's funny. No one would tell me that they've seen it, whether young adults or youth, but they all know about it. So clearly, you know, they know about the film. They know about the books. In the past, when the books first came out, I did have youth who had read the books and seen the movies. It was interesting that in our church, you know, there's just that idea that even if you've seen it or read it, you're not going to tell anyone or talk about it. And so there's that idea where they know it's kind of something to keep under wraps, but yet they're exposed to it and maybe they're willingly engaging in this kind of media because it gratifies them. It's something they want, but it's certainly not something that, you know, they're going to talk a lot about.
Yeah. When that came up, the first go around, you know, when you said you did have some students who saw the films and read it and you caught wind of that, did you address that in any way specifically or maybe in more general terms and talking about sexuality and broken sexuality with pornography, or did you have individual conversations?
Probably not as much as I should have. You know, around that time, there was a kid who was bringing Cards Against Humanity into our youth group. And I don't know if you know about that, but that is a card game that, you know, all of a sudden I see these kids in the corner of our youth room playing this game. It's very sexual in nature. And so I think around that time I did have separate conversations with them, and every year at camp we have the sex talk. But definitely looking back, I would have seized upon that moment, what was going on in culture, to connect it with what we're talking about in church.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, Jess, are there any ways that you've addressed this either directly as, you know, the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon, or more generally, just in terms of sexuality and pornography?
Well, I would say from the get-go, even years and years ago, where the book stemmed from is actually fan fiction out of Twilight. When 50 Shades came out, however many years ago now, where it comes up and how I've addressed it in those conversations really is about healthy relationships. And it is pornography, but it's, I would say in our context, it's almost like that's a given. Like, I think like Jody referenced, like kids aren't going to come and say, hey, I'm reading pornography. That's like, if you're doing it, you're not talking about it. So, but talking about the relationships that are represented in the books and how dangerous they are. And that's where I could get girls especially thinking and kind of questioning, oh yeah, wait, like, is this a healthy representation of relationship, of sexuality, and why am I drawn to this? And that seemed to kind of be the backdoor to talking about it rather than addressing it head on as pornography. Because at least in the Christian world with our kids, I think they know pornography they should stay away from. And so they might not be as apt to talking that angle at first. But the movie has made it more passive because there weren't as graphic or pornographic scenes. But the abusive relationship was definitely still there. And so that became the vehicle which we could have those conversations.
Hmm. Actually,
go ahead, Jody.
I was thinking that actually I don't think our population here really sees 50 Shades as pornography. Mm-hmm. And so for my group, just to let them know that, hey, I would classify this as pornography might actually be a good thing for them to hear and would make them perhaps think twice. But it's just that desensitization or redefinition of what porn is that I think needs to be brought out.
Jason, I'm going to jump in on you here because I know you have a question, but I want to follow up on what Jody just said, because one of our Facebook Live friends, Jerry Varner, made a comment here. And he said, you know, do we, basically, I'm paraphrasing here, but maybe we just don't, maybe kids don't see it, relatively speaking, as pornography. Or maybe the worst they see it as is, you know, soft core pornography as opposed to hardcore. And I know before we were came on here, Jess and I were talking and just about, or maybe it was Jody, I can't remember, but we were talking about how, you know, the movie is not as explicit as the book. So somehow we tend to justify, well, it's not as bad as the book, so it's not bad. Or it's not as bad. And we know, you know, the great majority of kids are seeing, being able to access really hardcore stuff online with smartphones right now, that when you have something like this, it tends to be more, and I hate to use these words, but a little more gentle or soft. And I certainly wouldn't say it is gentle and soft from what I understand, but relatively speaking it is. So we always go backwards and say, well, it's not that bad. So I think that's what Jody's saying. And that's certainly something that youth workers have to address, because we see that slide. Sorry, Jason, you've got a question or comment.
I think that's a great point. I think in the midst of this, though, I mean, when I talk about these movies and talk about the books, I don't often think about youth. I think youth are impacted by them in much of the same way that you've just now discussed, Walt. But I think of this as more of a young adult parent conversation, and how they read that and how it impacts them, I think then impacts kids. That's the biggest way that I've seen the impact of these movies. But I do think that there is something to the desensitization that has occurred because of these movies. And I think it's widespread. I don't think I know that we're focusing on 50 Shades of Grey and the sequels, but the truth is, I think it's a much wider spread issue. And it's just an earmark of something much bigger. I actually think that, I will say this, I found this interesting, and I would love some input on this. I found this interesting a few years ago when this movie did come out, and surprisingly how many Christian women had read the book and were actually intrigued by it, and it started conversation around sex and sexuality in ways that had never happened before. And I what I've seen is that I dance lightly around this, but what I saw was there was opportunity for more conversation that led to the biblical definition, the biblical sexual ethic. That allowed for those conversations, because the book gave them permission to ask questions, because they knew that inherently this wasn't something that they would find in Scripture. So it led to the asking questions in their small group or Bible study, or maybe even with their pastors. And so I'm just curious if any of that has happened. We don't want that to be the source of where they get information, but it struck up a conversation, which means we're not having that conversation. Does that make sense? Like it's something it's missing. And so, and Walt and I often talk about, we utilize opportunities in the culture to be able to have those conversations that lead to good biblical sexual, good biblical sex education. So I'm wondering if that has been at all a response or something that has happened in your churches or in some of the conversations that have happened over the last few years.
Has that functioned as a springboard, either in Houston or there above Philly with the folks that you work with? Are you asking specifically now, Jason, about more young adults and young marrieds and
moms? Young adults, parents, but maybe even students, because again, when I think of kids, I'm thinking more. It's kind of a it's gone from one audience to the next. It's not always kids. Now kids have read it for sure, and in much larger numbers years ago than maybe now. But I'm just curious if that has ever been a springboard and what that conversation might have looked like.
I would say here, I don't know that we've done the greatest job at that, but I do think that it's been an eye-opener and food for thought that around the ideas of shame and sexuality, if the church doesn't have something to offer around these conversations, then kids, married women who've been married for 30 years, young adults are going to seek out sexual information other places. And so what is our response going to be? I think that's a brilliant and beautiful place to kind of rest in and figure out how do we help our students and young adults and married people have a more open conversation about sexuality, a biblical conversation about sexuality, not pornographic. So I was talking with some of the guys here about it and not talking about Christian porn, but talking about how do we have open conversations? Some of what the book did, at least I haven't read it in depth, but really did allow language and I'm struggling with not being too graphic, but it just answered some maybe questions that people didn't even think they had or answered things that people weren't even sure they were allowed to think about or go to. So I'm thinking about a woman who's been married for 30 years and experiencing monogamous sex for 30 years. And the book opens doors that she didn't even know were there to exist. And so I think that's been the draw and why we've seen such a, it's this liberating, quote unquote, experience that they're having. And I do think it's our job as the church to fill in that gap and to stand there and say, wait, we can have open and honest conversations without turning to pornography to answer those questions or to address those issues.
Yeah.
So,
you know, just in response to that, and I like how you said that, Jess. I think what Jason's talking about, what you guys have talked about here with not providing good biblical sexual education, or like Jason, you know, when you're talking through Project 619 or us with the Sexual Integrity Initiative, you know, the old cliche, rather than talking about what God is against, let's talk about what He is for. And especially with sexuality, that God created sex and made us sexual beings, and declared all things, you know, in the garden, declared all things good. We tend to look at the biblical story and see it as a rule book, and I think we think erroneously, because good information was not given to us in terms of Christian education, we tend to think that God, you know, doesn't want us talking about it, and then what flows from that is doesn't want us doing it, perhaps. I think some people grow up believing that. But this lack of education now has resulted in, I think we're seeing in the wake of that, that now you have, for example, I had, when the first movie came out, I got several emails and messages from young married women who in their churches were in a small group. And something didn't seem right when they went to their small group meeting and all of the young moms were in one room and all the young dads were in the other room, the husbands, and the wives are saying, hey, you gotta read this. It's really going to change your marriage, you know, with no sense of borders and boundaries, right or wrong, or understanding, as Jess says, that this is pornography. And the men at the same time are saying to each other, you know, dude, you got to get your wife to read this. It'll change your marriage. And in many ways, to me, that just, I grieve that. I lament that because, you know, when Tim Chester, in his book, Closing the Window, Steps to Living Porn Free, I love his definition of pornography, where he says pornography is anything we use for sexual titillation, gratification, or escape, whether it was intended for that purpose or not. And, you know, basically, you know, we were talking before about how women would read this, and I think, Jess, you were saying this, women would read this and then they'd want to have sex. And so, I mean, you see right there, you're bringing something into the marriage bed from outside that, regardless of what it is, you know, you're going beyond the two who become one flesh and bringing someone or something else in, whether that someone is fictitious or non-fictitious, you know. So that's deeply troubling. That's deeply troubling. It says we've got to do a lot more work on the front end of this in terms of educating our kids. So, yeah. Hey, we need to take a break. And when we come back, let's talk some more. Let's continue this conversation. Jason's here with us. And then we've got Jody Chung and Jess Greaser with us as well. And we're talking about pornography, the 50 Shades phenomenon. And when we come back, we're going to look at some other aspects of this at some point get to the Me Too movement and how this figures into this as well. So stick with us. Are you interested in bringing CPYU to your church, school, or community? A big part of our ministry is the on-site seminars we conduct in dozens of settings every year. CPYU seminars are designed to encourage and educate your audience on a variety of youth culture issues. Every seminar is designed to be informative, practical, and hope-filled. If you want to learn more about our CPYU seminars, available speakers, and the many seminar topics and options in our growing seminar lineup, go to our CPYU homepage at cpyu.org. Click on the seminar option on the menu bar at the top of the page, and you can learn more about how to schedule a CPYU speaker and seminar for your parents, youth workers, and educators.
Welcome back to Youth Culture Matters. We're having a conversation on the 50 Shades of Grey phenomena that has taken place over the last several years. And we have special guests, Jody Chung and Jess Greaser, and we've been having a conversation with Walt and I surrounding this topic, this movie. And so I want to continue the dialogue and just ask the question, what are the conversations that need to happen as a result of this movie? What are some of the things that you feel compelled to lead either one-on-one or in group settings surrounding these movies or these books?
So I think for me, where I like to take it is helping people ask the question why. So creating a safe space where they can step back and say, so let's for a moment suspend the shoulds, just for a moment, not that they don't exist, not that they're not real, but suspend that, so that we can have a conversation about the why behind why you're engaging in whatever you're engaging in. And I think whether that's a 50-year-old mom, whether that's a 17-year-old girl, whether it's a young adult, let's talk about the appeal of 50 Shades or anything like it, of soft pornography, of the movies, the books. Talk to me about that and what's going on. And then I think that's where you start to engage. Right, so we meet God-given hungers and desires in illegitimate ways. That's what we do. And so when we can point people back to their God-given desires and those God-given hunger in their soul and allow them to get to the conversation point where they're realizing that the way they're answering that and they're feeding that is in this illegitimate, broken way, that's when I think life change happens and decisions are made to say, you know, I don't know that this is the healthiest thing. If God has a prohibition on my sexuality, it's because he loves me and he cares for me, not because he doesn't want me to experience pleasure. And so anyway, that's where I would like to see the conversations go, is helping whatever age and phase of a person you're engaging with, is helping them to ask the question why.
Yeah, I totally agree with Jess. I was going to say something along those lines, is just understanding, well, what needs is 50 Shades of Grey fulfilling? And how are we fulfilling those needs in proper ways? And so I would point to, you know, we have an inability to connect in meaningful ways nowadays with each other as friends, in relationships. I think there needs to be clear rules for dating. I've been reading a lot of dating books recently. But you know, it's just surprising to me that our youth and our young adults don't even understand what it means to date anymore, because there aren't those rules that were held commonly maybe two decades before, you know, ago. They don't stand true now. Anything goes. It's hookup culture, hangout culture. And so what I'm finding is that the appeal of 50 Shades of Grey exposes just this hunger for connection and intimacy in ways that perhaps the church and Christian relationships aren't filling for them. And so we need to go back and try to start from the beginning and understand, what does a healthy marriage look like? What does a healthy dating relationship look like?
You know, there's this great quote, and it has been attributed to G.K. Chesterton, but the reality is I don't think it's Chesterton. It's Graham Greene, I believe, who said it. But it's, you know, the man who knocks on the door of the brothel is looking for God. And that's what you're both saying here. And so you're using this as a way to, you know, maybe open the door, so to speak, and dig deeper into what the real issues are beneath, you know, the just trying to escape into or find redemption in the indulgence of physical lust and everything that's wrapped up with that in terms of our spiritual search and our longing for connections and relationships. And so I think what you're saying is really, really good. You know, use this as an opportunity to have those conversations about the deeper needs and then put, you know, sex and sexuality in its place.
Yeah. I appreciate the aspect of dating that you brought up, Jody. I think that there are a couple of core issues that are tied with all of this, but I think that this aspect of healthy relationships is missed in our culture, and and I think it happens both in the church and outside the church, because you brought up dating and the hookup culture. So when I go to a university, I'm constantly seeing that most times if someone wants to date, they hook up first. But on a lot of Christian campuses where purity culture kind of reigns, if you will, the process looks different. And the issues, the core issues around dating, no one really knowing how to date, the fear of rejection, all of these things are taking place. And so the need for the conversation and the why, I think, is so beautiful, because there is a longing that's happening most oftentimes of why it's drawing them in. And that can also then be the reason that we have conversations and really point directly towards the longing that they're really seeking, which is the knocking on the door. It's God. And I think that there are great opportunities for us to have conversations, not just about sex, but about dating. And so I'm so glad that we brought that up, because this has happened long before. Rom-coms, they have consistently shown relationships that aren't always healthy. They're not always helpful. They're not always edifying. And we've celebrated certain movies as romantic. I mean, I won't bring them up here because some people might totally disagree. But there have been illustrations of relationships that aren't always healthy. I mean, this one we can definitely say, yes, it's not a healthy dynamic. There is a power play. There's the way that sex is practiced is not good. It's pornographic. It's aggressive. It's abusive. But I do think that the need for dialogue around dating is sorely missed. And I will say one other aspect of that is I think that within the context of the church, I don't really think we have a grasp on what we want to talk about when it comes to – I'm talking Big C Church – what we want to talk about when it comes to dating. Because are we talking about like you can't date until you're in college, you court – You are only allowed to date if you ask the parents to be able to go out. And so, you know, there's all these different elements. And when there's no sort of clarity, it just brings a jumbled mess. And so I think that there is a need for this, especially in this these days, because romance, it's all over the place. And the internet is quickly changing that.
And it's not telling the truth either. I mean, just on romance.
That's right.
That's a thing to remember. You know, here, I say this all the time. Here, it's Valentine's Day. We have to totally reboot the word love, because the culture has, you know, drained it of its meaning. And we've applied our faulty human understandings of human love and seen God through the lens of that and interpreted God's love that way, which we have to get back to understand. You know, as David Wells says, the holy love of God. Hey, let's shift gears here for the sake of time. I just want to bring up the Me Too movement. Some people have asked about that. We were talking about it before we started to record here. You know, thoughts on that? You know, how does this mesh with that? I didn't read a lot, but I saw that there's a little more commentary on that, you know, floating around the internet now. I don't know what you've read or what you've thought about, but just thoughts on that and how to process that. Silence.
I think when I was reading reviews online, there's many things about this that are concerning, but I think it's difficult, and my heart breaks from young men and young women, that in examples like 50 Shades of Grey, I'm not sure how they're supposed to navigate the double standard. I'm not sure how they're supposed to wrestle through and not compartmentalize. You know, this may be harsh, but if Christian Grey was poor in a different socioeconomic, if he wasn't handsome, would any of his behavior be attractive or acceptable? But because he's wealthy and attractive, he's allowed to basically be abusive and a stalker. Like that, that's just, and I think for young women, not to go backwards, but the dating thing, I think what's a little scary about where we are is we've made so much of relationships transactional. And I think that's a deeply, deeply rooted belief that I'm not sure we talk about enough, that girls are willing. So you're rich, you buy me nice things and you're handsome, so you can treat me like this because it's really fine because you're giving me what I want. And he knows that he can buy, like, and we can look at a 50 Shades of Grey and all the brokenness that's there and kind of identify that. But I think going back, like on college campuses, it's not so cut and dry, but I think relationships are very transactional. And that's the scary thing with me too, is how are kids supposed to grow up in that context? And then they're confused when it's like, but these are the examples I was given. And so why am I not allowed to treat a woman this way? Or, does that make sense? Like, I just think that we're, for example, and that kids don't, if we're not having the conversation, I think for adults, but especially young brains, we're setting them up for failure.
Yeah. You know, I agree with that. And I think the only thing I can think of right now that, how Me Too, the Me Too movement and 50 Shades can coexist is that, you know, for the Me Too movement, it's women who have, are coming out with allegations of sexual misconduct or rape and the like. But with 50 Shades, it's consensual. You know, they're promoting the idea that it's okay when it's consensual. So the woman is allowing it or enjoying it, then we have the freedom to decide what we want to do. But with the Me Too movement, they were saying, well, we didn't have that choice that was done to us. But either way, I see an issue.
I think, you know, what you're saying here is there's been a total shift. I mean, everything from what Jess just talked about, the transactional, you know, aspect of this, the campus dating scene or hookup scene now, I don't think it would even be called dating, you know, void of emotion, void of even exchanging names, void of even exchanging a hug. You know, it is purely self-centered. You've got all these things coming together, and this is what, again, we'll go back to the soup, Jason. This is what's educating kids on relationships, sex, and sexuality, just totally breaking it, I think, even further, destroying shalom even more. And, you know, I'm thinking about Nancy Jo Sales in her book American Girls, where she talks about how pornography has not just defined sex and sexuality and personhood for our boys and our girls, but it is dictating for them the standards by which they interact with each other online through social media, and specifically with sexting. And as you guys were talking about this, the thing that came to mind is where she said, you know, boys present themselves as hyper-masculine, girls are expected to present themselves as hypersexual, boys assume a posture of demand, and girls are to assume a posture of supply. And so, you know, even that is, and you know, I hear stories of conversations that youth workers and parents are having with young teenagers, you know, who are just coming into adolescence, who maybe get themselves into trouble with answering requests for, you know, to send nudes or whatever. And the kids are stunned. You know, I thought that's what a teenage guy was supposed to do, the boys will say. And the girls will say, well, doesn't that, I thought that's what I'm supposed to do. Doesn't that show that he loves me, that he cares for me? And so it's, this is where I think the urgency is, it's just huge right now. It's just huge.
Yeah, I tread lightly with this because, you know, Walt, you and I have talked about this with regards to something that the Me Too movement has done, has caused both of us to look inward rather than just first outward. How have I been a part of this, or what are the things that I have done? I tread lightly because I think that this is a time for us to have reflection and to think about some of the many conversations that are needing to take place in the midst of this. With this movie specifically, though, what I find is that I don't see as much response from, like, what we see in the Me Too, or we see from some of the things that are happening in our culture, and then what's happening in the movie, they don't seem to coexist at the moment. On some levels they are, but it just seems like they're separate. And there seems to be a lack of understanding of the definition of pornography, what pornography is. So this doesn't often get labeled as pornography, but even if it does, then there's a second layer, and it's the lack of understanding of impact. Walt, you just spoke to some of that impact of the way that we engage, the way that we see, the way that, and I think that there has to be education surrounding that. I think that there are a lot of groups, there are a lot of initiatives to be able to do that. But I also think this, I think that there has to be better conversation around what abuse is. I think that sometimes people aren't really aware that they're either in an abusive relationship or things that are happening are abusive, and it's not just physical, it's mental, it's emotional, and they take form in so many new ways too because of social media. And then the other aspect is consent. I think you kind of hit upon this a little bit, Walt, but there needs to be conversations around consent, because there's not clarity in that any longer. And I think that it should be a wake-up call. I think the movement serves as a wake-up call for us to not just have conversations around, you know, what's happening in the workplace or some of the power discrepancies and some of the other things that are happening. But we also, I mean, we've got to make sure if we're going to do it, and my big thing is let's be consistent. So let's be consistent across all planes, so yeah. Movies included.
I want to make sure I'm hearing you right here, Jason. Push back on you a little bit where you're saying tread lightly.
Do.
I'm not sure why when you say tread lightly, what do you mean by that? And then secondly, because to me, that means, you know, don't jump into this too quickly, but I'm afraid that we might slow down and not jump into it fast enough because the culture is catechizing kids 24/7 on sexuality. And then the other thing is on consent, you know, if we're going to have a conversation about consent, we still have to discuss, you know, biblical borders and boundaries. Just to say, you know, we don't want to say to a 14-year-old girl and a 14-year-old boy, as long as there's consent. Does that make sense? I want to make sure I'm hearing you right here.
Yeah,
because I know where you stand
that
on
doesn't,
this.
Yeah, well, that doesn't take away from any of the borders or boundaries or the dynamic of what we live into with regards to the sexual integrity initiative. But there has to be conversations around this at a larger culture, because maybe it's as simple as a kiss, like. A guy feels like this has to happen, and so that, you know, there are things that this is where lack of understanding around dating, there's so many other aspects of consent that's not just sexual. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
So that's why I think there have to be conversations around that.
I got it.
And then I tread lightly because go ahead.
Sorry, it's an awesome opportunity to point out the fact that I think. For young women, I don't know for men, but one other issue that's come up with the Me Too movement, and I do think it's linked back to representations like in 50 Shades, that can you have consent, and then can you have regret, and then what is the next option?
Yeah.
And so in the Christian world, we're not allowing our kids and our young adults and our adults to have regret and then have open and honest conversations about that. It will always come back to consent and questioning, well, was there consent? So, for example, the girl in this book, Anna, gives consent, but at any point if she regrets something, you know, does that take away her ability to be self-advocating and have self-agency, that now she gives consent and so everything should just go? And I think that's a huge mistake, and we miss that opportunity. So I don't know if that feels connected, but I think that's very important to address and talk about that. I think especially in the Christian world, I think Christian young women, Christian young adults experience regret at times and don't really know where to go with those feelings. And it sends them spiraling either into shame and hiding or to kind of blocking off all of it and just saying, well, this is what I have to do, so I'm just going to give consent and it's fine. So I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to that flow.
Yeah. And Jason, you know, you mentioned definition of abuse and consent. And I would even add a third, and I don't know if I'm opening up a can of worms here, is authority. You know, what does authority look like in the Christian world? Authority in dating relationships, in sexual relationships, in, you know, just all sorts of relationships, or in the church function. What does authority look like? Is the man allowed? And Walt, you mentioned this earlier, is the man allowed to dominate and to demand? And perhaps some girls have a skewed belief that because they are the head of the household, mm-hmm. that they are allowed to do that.
Yeah, a lot. I mean, we that's a whole nother topic there. We could get into that where, you know, just with abuse, you hear those stories.
I just want to come back real quick to the tread lightly. And it doesn't mean that we don't enter into it. I just think that we've got to be really wise. And that's all I'm saying is sometimes we can run head first into these things and speak before we've really listened. And I just really – I say tread lightly because I really want to do a good work of listening. Doesn't mean we don't engage, but it does mean that we're engaging by hearing – so that we can better respond. And that's all I'm
got it.
I think about when I think about tread lightly.
All right, I want to turn the corner here. One last thing, and because I know Jody has a staff meeting, and we may wind up getting her fired if we don't let her off soon enough. Do you want us to keep you here? I mean, we can facilitate your exit.
No, that's fine.
Okay, right.
I'm okay.
No, you're facilitate your exit from your staff position is what I'm talking about if you want to. So here's what I want to say. I want to give you a case study, all right? This is real. This is a real deal. I had this conversation last week where a youth worker who's young called me and said, hey, I got a question for you. I have, and the person's new at their church. They inherited a youth ministry staff. They have an older, longtime female volunteer who it was brought to this youth worker's attention that volunteer had posted over the weekend that they were pretty excited about seeing the new 50 Shades movie. And this is someone who's leading students, who's, you know, working on the staff. You two are, but I'm going to throw it on you ladies because you're leading volunteers. You know, how would you handle that? That was the question. You know, what do I do? Does this make anybody else uneasy? Is this something I have to address? And if so, how do I address it?
I would facilitate their exit.
Okay. And it's that simple, huh?
Yeah. Seriously, I mean, that's how we do it. It's underground too, right? Just they've gone away.
Yeah.
No, I think, you know, there are some people I believe that would say, well, that is just, you know, you're fired. You know, you can no longer be a youth worker. And I really don't think I would go that route. I think it's an opportunity for discipleship. It's an opportunity to turn around a key leader's thinking and use that experience and that post for good, because basically she now has an identity with the kids. The kids can identify with what she said and the mistake that was made and how she turns around the conversation from that post can be really helpful in the long run. So I definitely would act swiftly. I would ask her to take down the post. And then I would have a conversation with her about all the things that we're talking about now. And then, you know, go a step further, I would say, can you speak to the youth that you're leading, maybe to the girls or to your circles of influence in the youth group, about what you wrote and how that was wrong, and how you had to confess your sin in wanting to see 50 Shades and even enjoying that, and how you are learning through this process, and invite them to walk with you. I mean, she's still the leader. She still needs to take charge of that conversation, but she can invite the kids into that. So I think that makes it much more approachable for the kids to talk about sexuality when you use it as an opportunity to open up the conversation. And like I said before, it's just a critical opportunity for discipleship. And as a youth pastor, I wouldn't want to miss that opportunity.
Yeah. Jess, anything? That's really good, Jody. Anything from you, Jess, on that? How would you handle that?
For discipleship, and it's a conversation. So I would approach it much the way she said, that it's a one-on-one conversation. It might be multiple conversations. I think, not to speak to fear, but I do think that as the generations get younger and all the things we've already talked about, you know, during this podcast are happening in our culture, it may be more and more difficult for young adult leaders. And I'm not meaning to throw them under the bus, but just to distinguish, wait, is this wrong? You know, where are the lines? And that's where I think we have such a key and integral role to have those conversations, walk them through it. In a youth group setting where they're leading, for sure, there's got to be a timeline attached. You know, it can't be a 5-year metamorphosis of a process happening, but it wouldn't necessarily be a once and done. It could be an ongoing conversation. And then I think, depending on how public the nature, we would need to address it with students that may have interacted with it or parents, but all with grace and love and care, and really with discipleship at the heart of it.
So I'd like to jump in and ask a question if I would. In this particular, because I think approaching it as an opportunity for discipleship and having that conversation is a great way to approach this. I think that conversation perhaps might be a little bit easier in your shoes being female. So what if this is a male youth worker approaching having that conversation with an older female volunteer or youth staff? I imagine that being a much more difficult conversation. Any suggestions on how that should be approached?
Man, I have to confess that I've been able to do two-gender ministry leadership for a long time now. So my heart is compassionate for you guys out there, man or woman, who are leading men and women and have to have these hard conversations. So I maybe wisdom or experience would tell me if there is a female either on staff or another older volunteer that you could bring alongside you to have that conversation with grace and privacy, and, you know, not to shame, but really just for protection of everyone. Maybe that's like where my heart would be going, is try to be wise in that, because I do think it's a sensitive topic. But if you don't have that opportunity, you can't shy away from it. I think it still would be addressed. So Jody, I don't know if you have more experience needing to have those types of conversations or how you handle that when it's across gender.
Yeah, for me, for example, some of our students need discipleship or need to be talked to about different areas of their life. And sometimes I might be more equipped to have that conversation, even if it's with a guy and not a girl. And so I've tried to just say, look, God has placed me in this position and this person needs help. And if I can't find somebody that can connect, especially with kids who maybe have trust issues. Mm-hmm. If they can't trust other people, then I just can't shy away from it just because I'm of the opposite gender. So I would say, Chris, to your question, absolutely try your best to find a female youth leader that can join you in approaching this person. But if not, go for it. Mm-hmm. Prayerfully, go for it.
Yeah, has to be addressed. I'll throw one more thing in here, and that would be that if my older self now is talking to my younger self in youth ministry, one of the first things I would do tell myself to do is don't try to handle this yourself. Go to the pastor, go to your supervisors, make sure they're aware of this situation, because our tendencies. I would go up the chain of command no matter what my age is. Because I want to be sure that these are difficult issues. I want to be sure I have wisdom and I'm surrounding myself with people who are speaking into this, giving me advice, and who will back me up, especially if I, when I take the advice and you know, go about this the way it's supposed to be going about. You know, so I would definitely go up the chain of command, because too many things can backfire. We've seen that, you know, and you don't want to have to lose your job. Well, let me wrap this up, and I'm going to ask you all if I'm going to mention a couple of things here, but if there's any resources that you would recommend. I know, Jody, when you were up with us at Gordon Conwell, there might be a couple of things that you could mention, but I'm just going to say very quickly, Dennis Hollinger's book, The Meaning of Sex, Youth Workers. It's a great one to read. It's a book on ethics, but it's very accessible, and we found it to be really, really helpful. You can teach from it, you know, build some conversations about sex and sexuality, all aspects of sex and sexuality with your kids. Jonathan Grant's book, Divine Sex, is a great one. Not a good one to read on an airplane if someone's looking over your shoulder and they see the title. But Jonathan Grant's book, Divine Sex, is a good one as well. And then I would direct people to Jason and Project 619. Jason, what's your URL there for that?
Project SIX19.org.
Okay, Project SIX19.org. And we're going to include links to all these things on the homepage. And in addition, our Sexual Integrity Initiative is a good one. And we do have a handout, a downloadable handout called A Parent's Primer on Internet Pornography, which gives definitions of pornography. Might be something that could help you as you want to craft your conversations and have a starting point. It's certainly not exhaustive. Jason, anything you want to mention resource-wise?
Well, I think that you've mentioned quite a few. I will just mention two articles that I think are really helpful, we'll make those available along with this podcast. But the first comes from Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug has had a really good insight on the movie, its impact, and the conversation around pornography. They've done a really good job of putting together data, stats, and other information. I'll also say this, Triple X Church, Craig Gross has actually seen the movie and can speak very clearly about its impact and how it's pornographic. And many of the things that we've talked about are very clearly laid out in a recent article that he wrote. So I think that those two are great resources, especially for us as we talk specifically about this.
Jody, anything from you?
Well, it is Valentine's Day, and so I did want to promote Ben Stewart's new book on single, dating, engaged, married. It was just released last summer. He's the pastor of Passion City Church, Washington, D.C. And I think he gives such an excellent paradigm for singleness. And the priority of that is to secure your undivided devotion to God and using that time well. And then he gives rules for dating, really practical steps as well as biblical principles for dating. And he has a whole section on sex in there, if you want to just jump to that, that relates to this conversation really well. And then he goes on to what does engagement look like? Mm. And then what does marriage look like? And so I think, like we were talking about before, creating more rules for dating or a better understanding of how to relate to the opposite sex would be helpful in this whole impacting society when pornography seems to be taking center stage.
Yeah. Thanks for mentioning that. That's good. A resource for singles as well. Jess, anything?
I was going to mention Fight the New Drug, that it was a great article. And then I would say maybe just out there to parents, Christian parents who are wrestling through this, I do think it's wise to look at some secular articles, because actually, at least with this topic, I felt like there was a lot of support and a lot of language. If your kids especially are in public school or they're hearing it, I think it's just important to understand the conversation from the secular point of view. So that's all I have to add.
Good, good. Well, thank you for joining us, Jess and Jody. Jason, go ahead and finish this out. I'm throwing it on you. I want to see what you got here.
All right. Yeah, well, it's not a lot, but well, thank you for listening. We appreciate your time. Have a great Valentine's Day.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.